What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, Connor Newt here with you. Clark Lee will join the program at 4:40. But before we get to Clark Lee, let's go to our phone line. Driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Gentry Estes of the Tennessean. Hello, Gentry. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Good afternoon. Good to be back with you.
Yes, thank you for joining us once again. So, Gentry, I know that you've been out at Titans training camp, and we are now 1 week into Titans training camp. I'm going to put you on the spot. Give me your way too early proclamation about the Tennessee Titans based on what you have observed through 1 week of training camp.
Way too early proclamation. Do we want a good one or a bad one? Because they're
why not both?
All right. The good one would be, I think they're going to have one. I'm not going to say one of the top five defenses in the NFL, but let's say top 10.
Okay. That is a proclamation.
One of the better third of the defenses. You look at Robert Saleh's track record, you kind of expect that the defense is going to be a lot better. And I've liked what I've seen on that side of the ball, especially up front. I feel like they've got some dudes in that defensive line room, and it's been a while since I've seen a position group with the Titans where I felt like they had some dudes like this. They're as good up front as they've been in a while. The bad is the defense is gonna need to be that good because I don't think the offense is really there yet. And you can be optimistic about Cam Ward and his development under Brian Daboll while also understanding that they could be in real trouble up front. And again, as always with these practices, right? The D line being good could be the D line is that good or the O line is that bad. And I tend to think as this camp develops, we're going to see more and more of this where I just feel like the O line's going to be overmatched by the guys they're going against up front. So a too early proclamation. That O-line's going to be terrible. But it's too early because they're going against a good D-line. You see what we can do this? We can do this all day, circular stuff.
Yes, absolutely. So, Gentry, Derek and I were having an interesting conversation yesterday as we were watching the beginning of training camp practice. We were observing Robert Saleh as he was going around and slapping hands with every member of the team during stretches. And Derek wondered if Saleh, in his second go-around as an NFL head coach, perhaps is going to smooth out some of his rough edges after failing in New York. And that is magnified, of course, by being in New York and having a 20-36 record as a head coach. I'm curious for your very early observations of Robert Saleh as a head coach. We haven't seen him coach a game yet. We've only been seeing him in mini camp and training camp. But I'm just wondering, just your early read on Saleh as Titans head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think a topic that's come up a lot so far in his tenure is that question of what did you learn from your time in New York? What are you planning to do differently? And he's always answered and said that, yeah, he did learn a lot and with a lot of reflection and going about some things a certain way. I don't know if that's really manifested itself yet, but I do think a lot of that will probably be relationship with players, getting guys to buy in. And I feel like Saleh has stepped into a situation with the Titans that a lot of coaches would like from the standpoint of this is a team that is ready to buy in. This is a hungry team where a lot of the guys on this team have dealt with a lot of losing the last couple of years. And you could get that sense, starting with Jeffrey Simmons, but some other guys too, you could get that sense during Saleh's introductory press conference, the players that showed up. There's just a sense in the building that they're tired of this. And I feel like whoever the coach was, he was going to get a high level of buy-in from this team because they're just ready to do things different and start winning. And I think Saleh's been a good fit for that to this point. in terms of the nuts and bolts of what he's really going to do differently, you know, in terms of calling plays or on the sideline in games, I mean, we'll see how it goes. But I do think Brian Daboll's presence is worth mentioning here, too. I think he is in a very similar situation as Saleh, a coach in New York who comes down here with a lot to prove. And I think the two of them together both create a coaching staff that has about as much to prove as any staff anywhere, and they're coaching a team that has about as much to prove as anyone anywhere, and I think that's probably a good fit.
We're talking with Gentry Estes of the Tennessean. Now, Gentry, which guy out there or guys have impressed you so far, and how do you think these particular players impact, whether it be the position or the offense or defense?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say like Alec Manner so far, and maybe not. That's not a huge surprise. I mean, he was productive last season. It's just he seems to have a little more aggression to him. He's standing out a little more. He made a few plays in traffic. There's just he looks a little different to me. He's carrying himself a little different. I don't know if that's confidence in his second year, but I think it's also the sign of a guy who was at risk of getting passed over on this roster a little bit. They went and signed some guys and they drafted Carnell Tate and signed Wandell Robinson. And he comes into this training camp with his role actually less secure now than it was when he was a rookie. And, you know, some guys respond differently than others, and he seems to have responded well. I've been encouraged by that, but there haven't been a lot of guys on the offense that I think have been all that encouraging. I think most of the guys that have stood out that you kind of nod your head at have been on the defense. And a big question I had kind of coming into this was the secondary. I did feel like, you know, you look at the D-line and you felt pretty good about things. And I think at linebacker as well, in the front seven, what has impressed me isn't necessarily the top guys as much as the fact that they're a lot deeper than they've been. You look at that, when the second team defense is out there, you're looking at a D-line and a linebacker group that's got first and second round draft picks out there. You know, they have quietly built up the depth defensively to where I think they're going to be able to play the way Saleh wants to play, subbing in and out a lot. And you've seen that too. A lot of guys going from first team to second team defense and even third string. And you're just a lot deeper. A guy like Anthony Hill, maybe you don't need to start right away, but he's been impressive. I feel like James Williams, kind of forget about him. He's been impressive. You're starting to see some development with some of the younger guys on defense, and I think that's a good thing. And going back to the secondary, we're not even really questioning Kevin Winston as the starting safety. He's just entrenched himself already as a key guy in this defense, and that to me is very encouraging for a guy who really wasn't that healthy a lot of last season. And he seems to be a no-doubt kind of guy for this defense. So that I think he's somebody they can rely on.
Now, we've talked a lot about the changes they made in the wide receiver room, and rightfully so. I think that's been one of the positions they've made a tremendous upgrade to. But we haven't talked much about the tight ends. Have you gotten an idea or a sense of how they're going to be used in this Daboll offense? Because it seems like this is a position that I think is a really good position, but because of the offense and what they may look to cater to more, the tight end may be sort of the lost position in his offense. But how do you feel you got a glimpse of how they're going to use them?
They're not throwing much to the tight ends, are they? I mean, they're just not showing up. I mean, this is definitely not the old training camps of Ryan Tannehill finding Anthony Firkser a million times over the minute. No, I mean, that's not what this is. And I think you're right. I mean, maybe Gunnar Helm can step up and be that kind of guy, but I don't know. Not real encouraged with what they have at tight end. It seems like for years now, the Titans have just kind of disregarded that position a little too much, and they haven't really tried to get a difference maker at that spot like, you know, maybe they had in the past with some of these other guys. And I don't know if it's a function of this offense and what Daboll wants to do, but no, we have not seen a lot out of the tight ends. That's for sure.
Gentry Estes is with us for the Tennessean. And Gentry, I thought it was noteworthy about just how non-dramatic yesterday's skirmish felt in comparison to some past ones. Do you agree in terms of how Robert Saleh just matter-of-factly handled the Jeffrey Simmons fight within the offensive line, defensive line situation compared to the circus it was a couple of years ago? I thought it was a noteworthy change.
I see what you're saying there. I think, you know, look, one thing that stuck out to me at the first padded practice on Monday, did y'all notice how long the plays were going without a whistle? They were letting these guys push and shove 10, 15, 20 yards down the field. And when you really saw, I mean, I think that's their way of wanting to see who kept playing. You know, and defense not trying to rip the ball out, and then the ball carrier finishing runs, that kind of thing. But that, to me, is a recipe that is designed to cause these skirmishes. When you keep playing, there's a lot of pushing and shoving down the field. I was a little surprised we didn't see more of these skirmishes on Monday because of those late whistles. And, you know, we asked Saleh about it, and he said, well, we'll stop the play. We're just trying to see, you know, the ball carriers finish plays and things like that. But to me, when you see what seemed like deliberately late whistles, it kind of made me wonder if they wanted to see a little of that. That's just my read on it. Hmm.
I know you've been over at Vanderbilt football practice here recently as well. Tell me what you're picking up over there as they try to come off a season. I mean, this is unprecedented, right? Coming off of a season that they're coming off of, and the follow-up, everybody's curious to see what they've got.
Yeah, first practice this morning, still pretty early out there. Interesting, Diego Pavia was there, guys. He was at practice. So just when you think he's not walking through that door, he walked right through that door. No, but I think, obviously, the big question being the quarterbacks. You know, we saw in the spring how talented Jared Curtis was. I think it's going to come down to, I mean, it's pretty clear that in talent, that's not going to be very close, but I think it's going to be what gives them, what they believe gives them the best chance to win games. And if that's Blaze Berlewitz and an offense that stays a lot more buttoned up and just hands it to Cedric Alexander 25 times a game, I think they'll do that. I do. And I think, you know, Jerry Curtis is going to have to step up and win this job. And I think to do that, he's going to have to earn the trust and respect of older teammates and veterans around that team. And, you know, that's what the next couple of weeks are going to tell us. If it is Curtis, though, he is a talent, and he is something that I'm not sure. These are very first world problems that Vanderbilt football has with a quarterback like that, because I feel like if he isn't the guy, the fans are going to really wonder why, and they're going to want to see the best recruit in program history, quote marks, on the football field. But I think, given what's happened the last couple of years, I think Clark Lee's got he'll be able to do what he wants to do and what he thinks is best, because he has proven to know what works in this league. And I think if it isn't Jared Curtis, then I think there'll be a good reason. But, you know, I think for all of us, it'd be a lot more entertaining if it was.
Another thing that goes along with that is, I think we would all agree, Cam Ward's first year as a rookie in the NFL. I realize the NFL and the SEC are two different things, but Cam Ward's environment was really tough. He didn't have a lot of help. I'm curious, because Vanderbilt through the years, right, hasn't had, for example, when they had a talented guy like Jay Cutler, they had very limited stuff around him, and it was up to Jay Cutler to sort of carry the team, even when he was a freshman and a sophomore. It seems like Vanderbilt has gotten very good at their formula of building a pretty good roster around if and when Jared Curtis does take over.
Yeah, no question. And I think that gets overlooked too much with Vanderbilt here. When people are talking about what's happened to that program the last couple of years, understandably so, everyone looks at Pavia, and I get it. I mean, he was such a spark plug and a key to what it was they were doing. But when you really look at Vanderbilt, it's a little bit similar to what I said earlier about the Titans. When you look at their D-line and some of the O-line's been rebuilt nicely, but you look at their defense, I was out there watching the scrimmage this spring, and their third-string defense, I mean, guys, they had legit D1 transfers out there running around on the D-line, linebacker, and you could tell it. I have a hard time believing that Vanderbilt's football's roster has ever been as deep as this one. They have done a lot of very good work in the transfer portal and building this up. They've stacked a few years of this now, and they're doing a lot more than what they've ever been able to do historically just by recruiting high school players. I think the success of the last two seasons certainly helped a lot, but so has NIL. I don't know why everyone was so convinced that Vanderbilt was going to be overmatched in NIL. That's a wealthy school with a wealthy alumni base. And I think Vanderbilt has built up in several sports in NIL, maybe a little better than what would have been expected. This is a more talented roster than it gets credit for around the SEC. And I think that did get overshadowed by Diego Pavia and his performance the last couple of years. You know, maybe they don't go win 10 games without Diego Pavia, but I do think this is still the kind of team, even with uncertainty at quarterback, that could go to a bowl game, have a winning season, and continue a lot of the momentum that they've been building.
Gentry, before we let you go, because this will flow nicely into the conversation we're going to have after we get off the phone with you, can you speak to the absurdity of the Arian Carter suspension for Tennessee?
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty crazy, right, that he gets suspended two games when you had a guy who was, like, what, betting on his own team who got one game by a judge? I don't know. I've given up on trying to figure any of this out with the NCAA. I just hope they get to a point where this is – they have a handle on this to where they're actually able to enforce their own rules that matter. Because in this particular instance, it felt as if they were really going out of their way to enforce a rule that didn't matter. It seems absurd given what's happened with the sport. I think anybody would look at that and be able to see that. You know, it's a matter of selective enforcement by a legislative body that is becoming more irrelevant by the day. They need some help. And, you know, the idea of Arian Carter getting suspended for something like that, it's you know, you look back and just 5-10 years ago, the things that the NCAA was suspending players for and taking eligibility away for, it's just become adorable in comparison to what's going on now. And I don't know, the NCAA is anytime you feel as though they couldn't possibly get more out of touch, here they go proving that wrong.
Gentry Estes of the Tennessean has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Of course, that's where you can read all of his outstanding columns. Gentry, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch up soon.
You bet. Take care, guys.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we will talk about the Arian Carter suspension, because Josh Heupel had some choice words for the NCAA yesterday. We'll play those for you and discuss it coming up next. 615-737-1025. But you know what? Let's give away some tickets, shall we? If you would like a 4-pack of tickets to the PBR Stampede Days at Bridgestone Arena next week, be caller number 3 right now at 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a 4-pack of tickets to PBR Stampede Days at Bridgestone Arena. Tickets will either be for Friday, August 14th, or Sunday, August 16th. Caller number 3, right now, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
The ruling that came out from the NCAA, the 2-game suspension, I truly believe is bull. You look at the landscape of college football, the rules from NIL, everything. I think the ruling is completely outdated.
No lies detected from Josh Heupel yesterday as he reacts to the suspension of Arian Carter. Arian Carter will miss 2 games after an agent paid for his flight during the NFL pre-draft process, valued at $427.48. So, as Gentry Estes said in the previous segment, I have stopped trying to understand how the NCAA enforces these things, but I can't argue with the choice of words from Josh Heupel on this decision, Willie, to suspend Arian Carter for 2 games. It was actually 3 games initially. Then, after an appeal, it was reduced to 2 games.
3 games?
So it was supposed to be 3, but now it's 2.
This story's been marinating for a couple days, and, I mean, I don't care if you're a Vanderbilt fan, an Alabama fan, like the teams that can't stand Tennessee the most, like whatever you think those schools are. I have yet to find the person that thinks this was a sound ruling or even thinks it's like, this is look what happened to Tennessee. Like, this is one where you just, this makes zero sense on any level in today's thing. It just, it's absolutely unanimous that people think this is ridiculous. It's amazing. Like, whoever wrote the release or the final verdict, like, the person had to grab the page, right? Whoever's going to put this out to the media and look at it like a judge does when they see the verdict of a trial and look at, like, you know, like there's just that look, you look above your glasses like, are you guys sure that this is right? I mean, it's so ridiculous.
I don't know what the NCAA call themselves doing. I get it. It was a rule, and he broke it, but he paid the money back. And even, I mean, if you want to suspend him for one game, okay. But to suspend him for two games, you actually had three, like y'all said. They had three, and they got negotiated down to two. It was $400, and he paid it back. He was going through a process. It's not like he took this secret flight to, you know, to see a team or an agent, and it was found out. No, you knew about it, and he then paid the money back. So the whole three games to two games doesn't make any sense. Again, you would be standing on firmer ground if you said, okay, he's suspended for a game or half a game. But to get more than that, I just think it's like, okay, now y'all want to wake up and start doing something.
So from The Athletic, if you haven't been following this story, after Arian Carter elected to enter the NFL draft this offseason, he accepted a flight from an agent valued at $427.48. However, amid Carter's draft preparation, his team discovered a toe injury that required surgery, which would have prevented him from working out in front of NFL teams for several months. Carter withdrew from the draft before the deadline for underclassmen to decide and repaid the money before disengaging from the agent, Tennessee told the NCAA. The NCAA said in a statement, quote, NCAA rules are clear. Are we sure about that? Student athletes may not sign with agents to pursue NFL draft opportunities, and this student athlete knowingly violated those longstanding rules. When student athletes violate NCAA rules, the school declares them ineligible and works with the national office to determine requirements for reinstatement, which can include repayment and or withholding from competition.
I mean, he paid it back. It wasn't that much money. This is a new era that we all know about. It's such a no-brainer. Like I said, it's like I have yet to hear the person, but hey, what about this? Like, no, nobody has that.
My understanding is Big Joe Dubin supports the NCAA's decision. I heard that on Robbie and Rex Road.
Okay, so he's the dissenter.
The Joes, Rex Road and Dubin, have been sparring about this.
You know his reasoning behind that, right?
Remind me.
His reasoning is, well, Pete Rose broke a rule, and he's not allowed in the Hall of Fame, so this is the same thing.
Oh.
Genius.
Again, you can't compare the two. But again, I understand that it was a rule in the rule book. But again, he paid it back. He went through the whole process. He wasn't trying to hide it. Okay, if you want to suspend him for a game or a half a game, okay, people can probably understand that. And you still have a faction of the group that would be upset. But two games? First it was three, but then you said, okay, we're going to do you a favor. We're going to give you two games.
And he's still missing a game against Georgia Tech.
Exactly.
That's an important game.
And that's why a lot of people are upset, because you have the leader of your defense. He may just be the best player on your defense. And for a small infraction like this, the NCAA, just stop. Just stop. Go find something to do. Go help pick up trash, like in the local neighborhood somewhere. Because right now, y'all ain't doing nothing.
No, I mean.
But just making people more upset.
10, 15 years ago, this would have been the scandal. Oh, my God. He got how much? $427? You can't do that. Also, anytime I hear the word student athlete, I sort of cringe at this point.
Like, it's,
they're an athletic student. That's what they are. I've always said that.
I do almost not want to know sometimes like what school is like, you know, with all of the things that any student has now with AI and ChatGPT and all these things. But when you're now basically a professional athlete and you quote go to a school, I do wonder how much range there is of how many guys really do value and get to class and go through the work. I hope that the coaches still find time.
I'm sure they do.
I understand sure it's a big money thing. Like, who's kidding who? Right? I think Danny White had some interesting comments about just the whole thing about do they need to have collective bargaining and stuff. He's a collective bargaining guy. But he basically called out what's happening and said, we just need to get real, you know, and call it what it is. This is pay for play. These are professional athletes. Let's not go through the charade of the NIL and make it about, hey, you're using it, – it's straight up pay. It's what it is.
It is. And
so where does school come in? Where do rules come in? Right now there's none.
I think school is still a big part of, – you know, if it was a big part of your program before this, I think it's still a big part of your program after this. Now, you know, it may be by case by case situation when you're talking about individual players, but I think, you know, the attention to toward and importance toward, you know, education, I think is still there for the most part. But, you know, because now these students are able to, you know, earn, you know, a pay or leave and choose to go somewhere else, it makes it harder for you to sort of obtain that goal, which is to get a degree, because you're moving from school to school. It may take you a little bit longer. But there are more kids. We only see the kids that they talk about all the time. There are more kids that are just athletes that are just going to school, and they know that that big payday isn't coming in college, nor is it coming after college. And you have more of those students playing their sport, you know, especially when the numbers are larger, like football, playing the sport, maybe getting a little money, but understand I'm still got to go to school.
I'm reminded of the, I don't know if they do this anymore, but I'm reminded of the ad that always plays during the NCAA men's basketball tournament where it's like some, like 80% of our athletes will, you know, have a career in something other than sports. You know what I mean? Like, I think about that. I don't remember the exact number.
It's true.
It's like 97%, 98%
Yeah.
Yes. But
and even if you make, I always make this point, even if you make it, okay, like I played 2 years of minor league baseball. So in a way, I made it. Like it was my dream to get drafted. I got drafted. I played 2 years. And then I was 24 and it's time to get a job and be a pro. Like do
that's
something
when it
other
kicks
than
in.
Right. So whether that happens when you're right out of college, when you're 21 or 22, or you make it for a while, maybe you make the NFL for 2 or 3 years on a practice squad, maybe you have one great season. But they're all of the pathways, even for the guys who, quote, made it, the 1 or 2%.
Yeah.
By the time you're 26, 27, in most cases, you got a long way to go in your life. What are you doing? Are you prepared for that transition? And even if you made a couple million dollars in college or made a couple million dollars when you combine college and pro, you still that's not going to set you for life, right? In almost all the cases. So the ones that are smart are paying attention to where am I going to school alongside of what am I doing for sports?
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Arian Carter suspension. Was suspended 3 games, now only 2 games, for accepting a flight from an agent valued at roughly $430. Just seems absurd to me, considering everything that's been happening with the NCAA over the past several years. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll keep it in college. We will be joined by Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Today was Vanderbilt's first day of fall camp, so we'll catch up with Clark Lee about that first day. Of course, we'll ask him about his quarterback competition, and more coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Clark Lee will join us momentarily. Willie's in charge of music today.
Yeah, who's winning the battle, Mariah or?
One texter says Mariah is overrated.
Overrated?
Whoa.
Wait, hold on a second.
Fight I ain't going to go that far now.
Come on.
Whoa. She may not be better than Whitney, but there's a lot of people that ain't better than Whitney.
We're throwing out a little healthy debate. Whitney at her best versus Mariah at her best. I think it's a pretty good toss-up. Overrated is not in the lingo of either one, I don't think.
Should we ask Clerk Lee for his choice when he comes on here momentarily? I'm firmly in camp Mariah Carey just because...
Really?
Well, Whitney Houston, I feel like, maybe predates me a little bit. But they're both...
I feel like Whitney is more so timeless, right?
Whitney is like air. You need it. Just need it, okay?
All right, you know what? We'll have Clark Lee serve as the tiebreaker. Let's go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Clark, we will ask you about football practice, but before we do, we need you to break a tie. Mariah Carey or Whitney Houston?
At their best.
Is this what we're doing today?
No, we'll get to the real stuff in a moment.
We're just starting you off with a change-up. We're starting you off with a change-up. We're coming with the fastballs after that.
I just want to be clear that you guys and I are on totally different planets right now. I'm only focused on football, but if I'm going to have to have a vote here, I'm going to go with Whitney.
There you go.
Okay.
Come on now.
Although you can't beat Mariah Carey on the Christmas album, so I got to give credit where credit's due.
Well, we'll get you back into football mode here instantly. So today was the first day of fall camp. And I know the first day of fall camp, Clark, is just one data point in a long season. But is there anything specific you watch for on the first day to gauge the pulse of your team?
Maybe not so much pulse of the team, just because I think you're going to get a feel for that when you're 2 weeks in and – you kind of been challenged, but I think today it's about the initial responses. It's about kind of the mindset part of it. Cause when you add the helmets and you add the shock pads, you change the conditions. They've been used to running around without helmet and in t-shirts. And now it's going to be a little hotter and there's going to be a little more physical to it. And, you're going to see how they respond. And honestly, I wasn't thrilled about that today. When I watched the film, I thought we had a pretty good day, but in the moment, I felt like we were giving into the conditions a little too much on the perimeter. And so a lot of room for improvement, but I like the team, and I'm going to keep pushing them, and I know they're accepting of that. And we're excited to have day one behind us and focus now on day two.
We heard Diego Pavia was at practice today, Clark, and I know his goal is to land with a team, but – two-part question. Do you anticipate him continuing to be around the program as he searches for that team? And how will you utilize him as you enter the post-Pavia era on the field?
Well, I think he has a number of different opportunities that he's working through. And he's just got to kind of figure out what's next for him and what he wants to do, you know. And no matter what he chooses, obviously – not only do we support him, but we honor him as such an important part of our family. And so to have him here today was really meaningful. It was great to see him. I enjoy watching practice with him because he'll always kind of give me the inside scoop on the quarterback position and what he's seeing, which is fascinating. This guy's got such a great football mind. And I told him today, you know, anytime he's in town, I want him around. I want him to be in meetings with us. I'd love for him to sit in with the quarterbacks and just kind of share his wisdom. And he obviously is so invested in what we're doing and has so many close relationships in our program that it was really natural for him to be here today. And I expect him to be around when he's in Nashville for sure.
We'll talk with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt's head football coach, as they head into fall camp. Now, Coach, every year, and I think I know I asked you this question last year as well, because faces change, and they change as much as they've ever changed in today's football. But is the message the same each and every year, but then you add some new things to it, or does the message change?
The foundation, mm-hmm. like kind of the core DNA of who we are, stays the same. It's kind of, you know, we're pulling forward a culture and an environment that we've been really building over 6 years. It's kind of really kind of come into focus over the last few seasons, but obviously every team is different. And so, and I hope that I'm evolving in my role too. So maybe subtle points of emphasis shift, you know, really kind of through the course of the year, getting to know the personality of this group and where I feel like we need to improve, you know, gives me a chance to adjust the message in ways that are meaningful to them, but also demand that the things that we know represent Vanderbilt football show up all the time. So, and I think there's some comfort in that. Like what we've done has been successful. It hasn't gotten us all that we want. And so we need to file and refine. We need to continue to improve. And yet we know there are certain core components of that identity that have to be there for us if we're going to have success.
Now, Jared Curtis, obviously, is one of the, if not the biggest recruit that you've had on your team. And have you had a chance to talk with other coaches, for instance, Sark down at Texas? Because when Manning was out, it was, you know, you got to play him. But he found a way to allow the guy to mature as a quarterback and yet still play him when he needed to be played. Do you consult with guys like that that are in a situation that you're in?
So certainly. I mean, anyone that I feel like has experience, and it doesn't have to even be in football. You know, you got a mm-hmm. young player who has elite skills, who, you know, obviously needs to show that he can kind of handle the down in, down out operation. But, you know, how do you know when someone's ready? How do you know what they're ready for? Those are great conversations to have. And at this point, though, you know, I've kind of turned the page on that, and it's just about focusing on where these guys are day in, day out, you know, really being present with them through training camp and being thorough in our evaluation, and also improving them through camp too. I mean, I thought there were strides made at the quarterback position through the summer. I'm excited that we've kind of changed the launching point for us here in training camp through our work in the summer. And now, you know, how do we not go out every day thinking the job's on the line, but instead just focus on continuous improvement and, you know, being at our best and making our mistakes full speed. But, you know, I've talked to not Sark specifically, but mm-hmm. I had a great conversation with Coach Saban, who's you know, been in situations where he's had freshmen that were a certain level ready to play. I've talked to guys outside the sport and some inside the sport. So always try to keep the kind of network active. And anytime I have a chance to get some knowledge or information or insight from someone who's lived it, I try to do that.
Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee is with us. And Clark, we last got to see Jared Curtis, most of us, at the spring game. And in the summer, you don't have official practices, but, you know, for him, just getting acclimated to the college lifestyle and things, that's, I'm sure, valuable. Where else can a guy improve during that time of the year? What do you try to emphasize with somebody like that?
In terms of training camp?
Well, in terms of over the summer, how you make use of the time and try to get yourself ready for camp.
Yeah, the beauty of the summer, like we say in our program, summer is for mastery. So a lot of times you're dealing with far fewer distractions. You have 24 hours in the day. Obviously, we want to sleep and recover, but you got a lot of time that you can spend in the meeting room and around your teammates, and both of those things are important. I think, obviously, connecting around ball is super important, and for a young player, you know, there's not enough time that you can spend in the meeting room and the film room learning the process, but also important is actually building genuine and authentic connection with teammates, because that shows up for you when it gets hard and the struggle is inevitable. So that's really the push. And you see that, I mean, certainly with Jared, but with all these guys, there's a closeness and a connection that that came out of the summer. And what we can't do is allow the context of competition to steal that from us. This is about building the best team we can build. And that means each individual has to come into it, certainly aspiring to the best role or the role that they want, but also understanding ultimately they got to fill the role the team needs them to fill. And that's hard, you know, for anyone and any time, certainly in the times we're in right now, it's challenging, you know, to not be so individual focused. But these guys are incredible with what they've sacrificed to get to this point, and the care they have for one another shines through. And my job is to make sure we keep our focus there, and again, build the best team we can build.
How do you think Blaze Berlowitz has handled his unique challenge? Because I've certainly been the guy that you work hard behind the scenes, you're waiting for an opportunity, and now the window is probably open for him more than it has been in the past, and he wants to make the most of it. So what are you seeing from him?
Consistency. I think he had a really good summer, and I was very happy for him in that. Obviously, we're one day in here, but you know, today he looks steady. He's not holding it too tight, and that's so important. I mean, I think he has the confidence that in his mind the job is his, but he's also such a good person, a great teammate, and I know he's got a connection with all those guys in that room, but he's specifically built a friendship with Jared, and so you know, I see that as a sign of his own confidence in himself, and I trust him no matter how it shakes out to be a great teammate. But really happy for him and how he's handled himself and really the consistency and kind of professionalism he's brought day in, day out through the summer and now into the training camp.
Last thing for you today, I look at the roster and I see a lot of guys that have been there and now have built something, right? A Junior Sherrill, a Dante Carter. I'm just looking down the list, you know, the Cedric Alexander, guys like that. How I'm sure they have a lot of pride on building what's there. And then you've got a group of new guys that are trying to take you to another level. How is the mix between guys that have been there, for two or three years, and your new group?
Yeah, I mean, and just obviously like Miles Capers, Issa Ouattara, Brian Longwell. I mean, we could go on and on. Yeah. There are a bunch of guys who are foundation. Kiva Wesley's been here 7 years. You know, he's been here longer than I've been here.
It seems like Nick Rinaldi's been there for 7 years.
Rinaldi,
close.
Another yeah. one, yes. First of all, these guys, and again, if I'm missing someone, it's not because I don't love and respect them. You know, these guys are so meaningful to me, and in so many ways, I think we've grown together through the struggle of this, and we share in celebration of where it is, and our hope to take it further. So as we introduce new players, be it freshmen or I think more challenging sometimes guys that have a lot of snap experience and success at the college level, where they've done it in a different program. What we need to make sure is that the voice of the guys that have been here the longest is the loudest. You know, that there's a real need for incoming players to learn what Vanderbilt football is from those that have experienced it, lived it, helped elevate it. And then once they do, you know, their job is not to revert back to old habits, but it's to help us move it further. And we've been clear about that with those guys since January. I think, you know, again, we're such a program of responses, and I think some of the proudest moments I've had are times where we've had our backs against the wall and we've kind of punched our way back into a game or punched our way into a result, or, you know, certainly rallied in a season and had a chance to find success. And so, you know, the caretakers of that legacy are those guys that have been here the longest. And we're working hard to make sure the newcomers understand exactly what Vanderbilt football is. And I'm really happy with their progress in that. We're not all the way there yet, but again, we'll keep hammering away at it until we put a team on the field that we think fully represents our program.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Fall camp underway for the Commodores, who open the season September 5th against Austin Peay. Clark, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We look forward to doing it again soon.
Oh, my pleasure, guys, and I'll let you guys get back to the important stuff. Came on and interrupt that. I didn't mean to interrupt. Y'all take care.
615-737-1025. Clark Lee says Whitney Houston, so I think the matter is closed. But
yes,
we'll continue to take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.